We're going to be skipping announcements for this week, but you can check out online the excellent calendars at SeacoastPeaceResponse.org and NHINDYMEDIA.org. We do particularly want to highlight for you, though, the upcoming resolution hearing by the Portsmouth City Council this Monday. We hope you can all make it, and to inspire you for it, here's a song by Adam Brodsky called Uncivil Rights.
Hey, Mr. President, you can have my civil rights. Just leave me one or two to use when I go out Friday night. Lots of evildoers out there who hate democracy, so we must give up our freedom to preserve our liberty. Well, you should question my neighbor, search his place, take him downtown. He's either Buddhist or he's Muslim, I forget, but hey, he's brown. Either way, what I'm trying to say is he ain't like me and you. And listen here, why should I fear? You know everybody loves the Jews. Well, stop me on the highway, search my car and my cavity, delve into my past like I'm a Supreme Court nominee. If I don't got nothing to hide, then why should I complain? And if I don't like it, I can always go live with Castro or Hussein. Hey, Mr. Cheney, you can have my civil rights. Just leave me one or two to use when I go out Friday night. Lots of evildoers out there who hate democracy, so we must give up our freedom to preserve our liberty. Well, I'm a real American, bought a little flag to prove I ain't no commie, fascist, Muslim, pinko fag. I hang it on my window to show how much I care. Just don't ask me if I owned it when them big buildings still there. Well, I'm an atheist, so I won't get pissed if you take away Amendment the First and freedom of the press. Well, who do I look like? William Randolph Hearst. Peaceable assembly, redressing grievances. Boy, that sounds like hippie talk. We don't need your words, man. Ain't you heard? All the doves have turned to hawks. Well, I love the Constitution, but we need a new addition. Not a total demolition, just a small redefinition. Let's commit to the mission, make a couple small additions, like the use of intuition to declare the opposition. Some thumbing through the articles, I offer admonition and the dangerous omission of a law against sedition. You needn't be a politician or a nuclear technician to make a requisition for a couple new submissions. I heard Mr. Bush say there's a new kind of war out there. Apparently it's the kind you don't gotta get Congress to declare. I heard Mr. Lott say there ain't no minority. Then he stared at Mr. Gephardt, who nodded sheepishly. Hey, Mr. Ashcroft, you can have my civil rights. Just leave me one or two to use when I go out Friday night. Lots of evildoers out there who hate democracy, so we must give up our freedom to preserve our liberty, 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 preserve our liberty.
Due to technical difficulties, we're not going to be able to bring you the Jan Schaefer interview on Women and Work, but it may be available later in the online version. Next, we have a song called Union Made by Bev Grant.
I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't. I'm sticking to the Union. No, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the Union. I'm sticking to the Union till the day I die.
This is Amy Antonucci with Making Waves. I'm here in the studio with Nikki Hentz, UNH student, and Megan Smith, UNH alumni. Both are members of the Feminist Action League, a group that's based at UNH in Durham. Welcome and thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
So I want to hear more about the Feminist Action League, how it began and when. Why don't you start there with its beginnings?
Okay, well, it began last year, probably actually around this time, with this woman and this professor who were really disturbed with how Take Back the Night is orchestrated there, where it really involves the fraternities in it, and it has them leading the march and acting as crossing guards, and they were just like, excuse me, the fraternities? Take Back the Night, it doesn't really seem to work. And the woman wrote an op-ed, and it started all these responses defending the fraternities, and we formed the group to try to plan an action at Take Back the Night to draw attention to the fact that this is ridiculous. The fraternities, what are they, like, they're perpetrators of, you know, sexism and, you know, the rape culture at UNH, so in, you know, having them lead the march, what message is that sending? So, and the sort of service model at UNH where it's all based on what happens after somebody's been assaulted and not really preventing assaults from happening. So we wanted to focus on that there are perpetrators, that there are people who are assaulting women, that it's not just, you know, like a hurricane, like some sort of natural thing coming along, like men are assaulting women. And all the language was so gender neutral, like, we don't know who's doing it, but somebody's assaulting people and blah, blah, blah. And we were just irritated by that. So, and thought that it was really a wrong analysis of what's going on. So we formed the group and we did a couple of actions and we carried a banner at Take Back the Night and caused quite a stir. So that was sort of the beginning.
What did the banner say?
It said, "Feminists Against Frats." And then on the back, it said, "We do not negotiate with terrorists."
Very strong statement.
Yeah, it caused a little stir. Yeah, so that was the beginning.
Can you explain to people who don't know what Take Back the Night is at UNH and in general?
Well, it's actually, it started in the 60s or 70s in the United States as women marching through the pornography and prostitution districts. It was, you know, saying, like, cut this out, like, this is violence against women. So it used to be about women taking back the night, you know, in terms of pornography, in terms of the prostitution, date rape, all those things. And it's just sort of been, at UNH, it's been sort of co-opted into a system, into, like, every, you know, we can just go and do this march and have this speak out, and
It's not an action,
but it, yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's evolved into something where people are just kind of coming together as survivors and not really speaking out against the violence that occurs to women. And that's what it started out as, is a real action, a real statement for women to say, no, this is, you know, we're going to take this back. And as you can see with the fraternities being specifically involved in leading the march, I mean, it's totally rearranged itself into being something it never was in the beginning.
Do you know if this is typical of other universities or other Take Back the Nights? The sort of switch from a political focus to a non-political one?
Right. Basically, that's kind of how feminism has evolved over the last 30 years. I mean, it used to be a real statement in the 70s, and it's kind of been co-opted by the system, and now places, things that were set up like assault services and different, you know, areas that women could go to, it was just service oriented because that was what was necessary at that point. And there was also, you know, women speaking out with in regards to feminist issues and against what men were doing and how men were in power and how the system needed to change. And it sort of evolved into just a service oriented, no prevention, no speaking out against the perpetrators, no speaking out against men, and really analyzing what's going on here in society in general towards women. So you see what happens to Take Back the Night, and that's what has happened to feminism in general.
Tell me more about the analysis. It sounds like that's something that your group is based on.
Definitely.
We call ourselves radical feminists in the sense that we believe that it's a system-wide thing. It's not going to be changed through, you know, Band-Aids here and Band-Aids there. It needs to be, like, the patriarchy needs to be smashed, you know. Men are in power, men have not given up that power, and men are not going to give it up if we ask them nicely, you know. In general, we have to demand it, you know, and empower ourselves. And the way that, like, there's this campaign of this is what a feminist looks like, and it's turned feminism into an image, you know. Well, I can still be a girl and go to parties and participate in my own oppression and be a feminist without acknowledging that the things that you're doing, even though it's hard to stop doing them, are contributing to the oppression of yourself and the oppression of other women. And we take a system-wide analysis of all the things, the beauty myth and economic dependence and prostitution and pornography and how they all interconnect. And our connection with the fraternities is how the fraternities on campus are boys' clubs, majority white men. They say in their statements they're there to prepare the leaders, the men who are going to go and be the CEOs who are doing all sorts of bad things like Enron type things, the presidents. Actually, I think it's all but two presidents have been in fraternities. So the presidents who are making decisions about who to bomb, what laws to renege, like abortion. All of these fraternities are connected. It starts on the college level, preparing these men and maintaining their privilege and their power throughout. It's not a conspiracy, but the way that the system is set up, it works to maintain the power all over.
More about the fraternities at UNH. I understand that you've been calling for a lot of action against the fraternities beyond even just taking them out of Take Back the Night.
Yeah, I mean, we put a list of demands into, I think it was last semester, into the administration saying this is what we would like. We'd like to have a women's center. We would like to have the fraternities abolished. And we'd like to have the violence against women and social change class reinstated. There are a whole list of demands that we had. And definitely abolishing the fraternities is a number one on our list because it sends a real statement that this sort of culture, which is a sexist culture and basically a rape culture which we live in, you know, these are the people who are perpetuating that sort of culture. They're at that top of the hierarchy in regards to the way men act and how they treat women and how they talk about women and what happens to women in fraternity houses. So that is like a number one on our list for what we could do to make it a safer environment for women and also in general to send a message to the surrounding community that this is just unacceptable and that, you know, we're not going to allow this sort of culture to maintain itself on our campus.
What sort of responses have you gotten?
It's funny because most people, you know, when you talk to people, they're like, oh, the fraternities, whatever. But it's amazing how defensive people are of the fraternities when you actually say, let's abolish them, let's get rid of them. They say that we're stereotyping, they say that we're being sexist. They just obviously don't listen to our arguments. We list reasons and they're like, well, whatever, I don't care. They don't engage in what we are arguing. They don't say, well, okay, that's a good point, but what about this? They're just like, you're stupid. I don't like you. I like the fraternities. The responses that we get are just so banal, like the lowest common denominator. We engage in a lot of op-ed battles in the student newspaper, and it's just amazing what people write that passes as discourse, you know. We say the same things over and over again, and they never address our arguments, you know. And they make sweeping statements like, you think all men are the devil. We never say that. It's just the same thing over and over again.
You're seeing the backlash of what happens to women. They're marginalized when they stand out from the crowd and they say, you know, I see what's going on here, I'm analyzing what's going on here, and I'm throwing it back in your face. And throughout history, people have had a problem with the truth, you know, a real hard time understanding and wanting to, like you say, engage with the truth. And, I mean, it's even gone to the extreme of one of our members received a death threat, and we had a speak out in regards to that. And so you can really, really see how they're really threatened. And this is part of the process when you're asking for a revolution, when you're asking for change, when you're standing up for your rights. You're always going to get this violent outburst from people. And so we've had the extreme of just people not wanting to understand where we're coming from and to the extreme of just actual threats against, you know, our lives and our safety. So
you would particularly hope that in a university setting, this sort of discussion and engagement would be wanted and welcomed, and that the university as well would support it. How has the university, the people who run the university, how have they reacted and supported or not supported you?
That's an interesting conversation. A couple of our other members spent basically all of last summer trying to get the class Violence Against Women and Social Change reinstated. I think it cost
$3,000
to have the class, you know, all the overhead. And they're building new science buildings all over the place, but they can't give $3,000 for this one class that has really changed. Most of the women in FAL have taken that class, and that was sort of what opened their eyes. You know, it's a really eye-opening class for them. It was, you know, really powerful, and it just gets to the root of everything. And so they had meetings and talked to the administrators, and the administrators are just very condescending and act as though we're just whiny children wanting things. And they did set up a Violence Against Women committee, and they asked us to be members of the Women's Commission. But once we get onto those committees, we're completely shut down. They do it so that we'll stop, you know, so they can say, look, we did this.
It's a political move. I mean, the people they chose to put on the Violence Against Women's Commission have no education in specifically in violence against women. They're learning. They're trying to be good members of their community. And it's not to say that these people aren't valuable, but it's to say when you put a committee together, you want people who are well-versed, who are passionate about the topic, who want to make change. And I'm on the committee, and a lot of the people, we can't even get into a discussion about the root causes of sexual violence because they don't want to go there. When we say, okay, men are 95% of the perpetrators against women, and women are, you know, 8 out of 10 women are going to be the victims of a sexual assault. So it's obvious through looking at statistics that men need to be confronted about the way that they treat women, the way that they look at women, the way they feel entitled, and those sorts of things. And we can't even have that discussion. And if you can't have a discussion about what causes sexual violence against women, then what are you going to do to stop the sexual violence? And that's what the committee is built on. So it's a very political move, and that's, you kind of just are being shifted through the system, and you're finding that to really change the system, you got to push on it. You can't really work within it. That's what I'm finding. I come in contact with plenty of women, and we just had a patriarchy slam, which was like a poetry slam, and we've had our speak out, and so many women get up and tell stories of what's going on. And so this is obvious. This is an obvious problem, and it's from everywhere, just to how women look at themselves, to what happens in the classroom. Giving women a space to speak and to really respect what they have to say, to just outside of the classroom, how we're talked about and treated by men on campus. The sexist culture is just permeates everywhere.
Yeah, and there are a couple of men on the committee, which we have a problem with because it's, there was this whole debate when the civil rights movement was going on, when the women's movement was going on, and there was a consensus that there is a need in an oppressive culture for groups that are oppressed to have spaces where they can meet together without their oppressors there. Like inviting the CEOs to the union meeting. Probably not going to do that, you know. It's all about, we have to include men, and men really, they want to help. And I understand that, you know, all men aren't bad people, but all men are definitely participating in some ways, and they're receiving benefits from being male. You know, just as white people, we receive privilege for being white, and we have to recognize that and realize that we participate in it in different ways. One of my friends I was having this discussion with her about, you know, well, what about alienating men? Don't we want allies and blah, blah, blah? And it's like, well, I want allies who are true allies. I don't want allies who just say that they are. And just because they're a Democrat means they're the saviors of women. I mean, Clinton totally sold women up the river with welfare. And she was like, well, my boyfriend's a good guy, blah, blah, blah. And then she proceeded to tell the story about how he told this little boy to go smack some woman on the butt. And it's like, don't you see? Like, this is a good guy, and he is teaching a boy that boys have access to women's bodies, and they don't have to ask permission to have it, you know? And it's just it's so pervasive, and it's, we can't just be allies with everybody who wants to feel the...
It's like men need to take the responsibility upon themselves to educate and confront each other. And that's not our responsibility anymore. We are really looking towards strategizing and unifying women. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And a lot of women are not given the opportunity to have classes that really open their eyes to all these things that are happening to them daily. Women's oppression exists. And until I took a class, philosophy and feminism, I wasn't aware. I couldn't put words to my emotions. I couldn't put words to what was happening to me. So we really want to give women that opportunity. So we would hope that men that really call themselves allies would really try to educate each other, you know, take it upon themselves to do that and allow us to have a committee where we are able to have a discussion and a dialogue between women about, okay, what's happening here? What's going on with sexism? What's going on with oppression? And how does that lead to sexual assault and violence against women? And how are we going to change that? And it's hard to do with men on the committee because they feel alienated. They feel something. It's a personal defense that comes up. And it's like, we don't have time for this. Every 2 minutes, a woman is raped. There's a real urgency about getting to the root cause of this issue. So
we do work with a group, Men Against Patriarchy, who organized. We've been throwing a series of potlucks, and out of the potlucks came this. Men were always like, what should we do? And we're like, we'll form a group that is going to confront male privilege. And they did. And we do work with them because they have proven themselves allies. You know, they really realize that. I mean, like, sexism hurts men too. You know, we realize that. But the oppressed don't have to fight for the oppressors. Like, that's not how it works.
What are the Feminist Action League's plans from this point? Sounds like you've had some particular struggles so far in your existence, and I'm wondering where you're going.
Most of what we're doing at this point among ourselves is really finding a way to organize and to start a movement. Consciousness raise is what we pretty much want to focus on. We've started a consciousness raising group of women who want to talk about the issues that we face daily. And it's also having events that really come out. We're planning an event for the end of April. So things that are in your face that will get media attention, that will put this analysis out there, that will get people thinking and talking about it. So it's a mixture still of trying to find a way to organize people and to let them in on what's going on for women nationally and locally, and also just kind of throwing it in the patriarchy's face and being like, we're here, you know, and we see what you're doing to women, and we know who you are, and we're not afraid to call you on it.
Yeah, and I mean, our recent event last week, the Patriarchy Slam, went really well. I think we're really creating a space in the community for feminism in general, which has just gone out of style, apparently, you know, in any sort of political way. And people who used to be afraid of us and think that we were terrible have started to come around and support us. And even if they don't agree with our analysis in every way, like we're starting to gain solidarity with certain people. So it's frustrating and makes me pessimistic sometimes, but sometimes it's also, you get really hopeful when you have something and people, you know, show their support. So.
Mm-hmm. And your plans to continue pressuring the fraternity system? Is that an ongoing project?
That's just like our dream.
Yeah, it's sort of at the background of everything that we do. We always try to throw in, get rid of the frats.
So it is working with the system as well. I mean, I'm still a part of the Violence Against Women's Commission, and I'm trying really to find a way, not necessarily to compromise, but the most important thing, I think, for women is unification. And there's a change in mentality for women of an older generation, I find, even with my mom when I have feminist discussions. And a lot of the women on the Violence Against Women Commission are part of the system. They are working, you know, in service-oriented areas for supporting and helping women who are victims of violence. And so they have a whole different perspective, and they feel really threatened when we talk about the issue of, you know, men are the perpetrators. We need to be doing something that highlights that and that really gets to the heart of, you know, their participation in the oppression of women, violence against women. And I would love to find a way systematically to find a unification and to find a compromise between us so that it's not just this constant battle and this constant emotional output and loss of energy, just trying to find bottom line in a way that we can communicate in a positive way. Mm-hmm. So I have hopes for that, but I found over time working through the system that people really put up walls and they feel like personally offended when we talk to them about, okay, let's criticize the bystander intervention program, which is going on campus right now. Let's be critical critical of and critique the SHARP program, which calls itself prevention, but if you really look at it, it's not preventing, it's just supporting the people that go in there and have been raped and what they can do to survive. And it's not about surviving anymore, it's about stopping the rape, stopping the violence. And so the people we've confronted about this, to just look at it and critique it, have felt really personally offended. And we'd like to move past that and find a way that we could, you know, take a different direction in how we define prevention and how we, you know, take action.
Interesting how quickly it seems like people lose the interest or ability in really critically discussing things. And we have interesting models in our country, too, our president who doesn't allow public to go to any of his events because he doesn't want to hear any criticism of any of his programs. And even in groups, which started at least as a way to challenge these power structures. And it makes me think of also how much we really are part of the society, how owning our racism and owning our sexism and owning our issues with power and sharing and criticism and all of that are really just key to moving forward.
Yeah, because, I mean, because they're all, everything is connected, you know, it's such a complicated thing. Like, we have to change everything. We have to create a different way of being before we break everything down, or it'll just turn into a power vacuum and it'll happen again, you know? And I think that's what happened with the different movements, is that, you know, they didn't go far enough and they didn't really know. I mean, it's like, well, who could, like, how would they know, you know? But we really have to concentrate on creating a different way of being, a different way of relating to people before we can move forward.
Right.
And it's tough because not everybody is ready to do that, because it's not an easy thing to do. I mean, changing everything is hard, so.
Well, I'm glad you're out there trying to do it.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank
Thanks
you.
So much for coming in and talking to us. It's
Thank
good
you for
to
having
have
us.
You.
Yeah.
Nikki and Megan from the Feminist Action League at UNH.
Thanks.
Thanks.
I'm breaking strings and other things playing hard. No, I'm not on the rag, but I'm not on the run. I am matching the big boys one for one, and I must admit I am having myself some fun. Make them twitch around their eyes, make them apologize. Oh, and he had a mean streak 3 miles wide. It was a long walk to the other side. She tried to get through it, holding on to her smile. But he wasn't worth the time it takes to make that mistake. He just wasn't worth the while. She's been under command of the wrong man now. She'll give you anything except the upper hand. She was his mother and his lover and his wife. Now she wants the luxury of her own life, 'cause the every business and everything that she can sing. Like a son of a bitch, make him twitch around his eyes. Girl, make him apologize. They all want to lead the fight, and they know what they know, alright. But there's so much they just don't understand. I mean, what about the other sex? What about the other hand? They Twitch around their eyes until they realize. Breaking strings and other things, playing hard. No, I'm not on the rag, but I'm not on the run. Matching the big boys, one for one. I must admit, I'm having myself some fun.
That was Make Them Apologize by Ani DeFranco. Thanks for joining us for Making Waves today. The Making Waves crew is Amy Antonucci, Steve Diamond, Brian Gregg, Tom Jackson, Stanley Longstaff, Dino Pappas, Joanne Paradise, and Jeff White. We welcome and need your participation too. Please email nhmakingwaves@yahoo.com and let us know what you think of our show. You can also live stream our show on Saturdays from 2 to 4 if you are not in range of the station by going to www.wirenh.com/radio. You can also listen to all of our past shows indexed at freewebs.com/sprav/audio.htm. Thanks to Radio for All, our new host, you can now download higher fidelity files in stereo. Tune in next Saturday from 2 to 4 for our next Making Waves program.